This is episode 5 of the Antarctic Cast. And in this episode, I will try to keep it a bit less technical. I think it's important to have some more technical episodes and some that are less technical, because different people have different interests. But in this one, I'm just trying to give a bit the feeling of how this first week of training was, and a bit of the life in field work in Antarctica from what I heard. So I actually never been there or done field work, but we're being instructed about it, and I want to try to share a bit this feeling. So I think the main thing to stay is that it doesn't feel like work, really. Like, I'm not trying to say that because I want a reaction from someone, but it's really impressive how this first week passed, and I felt like, oh, it's just awesome and super interesting. So most of the talks we had, they were with scientists, because it's a scientific station, right? So very important thing that we do there is trying to have the instruments right or set it correctly to get measurements, and those measurements will be used later for the scientific community for their papers, but mostly to understand the world better. And this means space weather, this means glaciology, this means other environmental science like ozone hole, melting, whatever goes to the station. And different stations have a bit of different purposes depending on where they sit and what can be done there in a price efficient and accurate way. So I'm gonna try to tell a bit about field work. The first thing that I was not concerned but kind of like okay is that I had the impression that once you are in the station, you basically cannot leave so much the station. I don't mean the buildings, but mostly like the surroundings. And from what I heard in the first weeks, or in the first week, it's definitely not true. So there's a lot of field work planned, and field work can be done in several ways. It can be done via plane if it's a very distant site, or in a inaccessible, or surrounded by a glacier, some challenging environment. And it seems that, but this is just that we get to learn a bit how to co-pilot. So we're not pilots, of course, because a pilot training takes a lot of time. But since the planes, they have like a limit of cargo, often you go in two people. So you that are doing the field service work in a piece of electronics, and the pilot. So, I mean, you are the co-pilot, kind of. And the other thing is that in the ones that you go with a field guide, which is a guy which is more experienced in the outdoors and mountaineering, climbing, ice, like harsh environment, you go by skidoo, and then there's a series of procedures on how to like rope in a skidoo. So if the first skidoo fell down a crevasse, the second kind of counterweights and hold it back. This was also pretty interesting to hear. It would be very likely more interesting to do. So one of these experiments, it's called Life of Haley, which is basically a set of GPS embedded in the ice. And those GPSs, they are measuring, because you can imagine a glacier as a big chunk of ice that you can prepare perhaps in a big freezer. And there are different forces driving this ice to many directions. So it starts to break, and just to see how the dynamics of this place is, there's a set of GPS receivers to see where it's moving to, and then you can have a bit of a picture of the glacier. It sounds pretty cool, and you have to service that, so you have to see that the batteries, so most of the systems in the ice that we heard so far, they have batteries, they have a wind turbine, and they have a solar panel, which obviously only works in the period of the year you have sun. And then this system often is associated to, I don't know, in this case the GPS that I mentioned, in another case where you want to measure the magnetic field, a magnetometer, or in another place where you have an antenna. So basically you can think about there's energy generation, there's energy storage for the times you don't have generation, and then you have a logger or a scientific instrument of some sort. So one of the trainings we had, it was pretty interesting, was going to the garden of the company and then building one like power system. So like, how do you assemble a solar panel in the middle of nowhere? How do you assemble a turbine? Which kind of things you have to know, like, because remember Antarctica is very cold, it's also extremely windy. So if you're gonna put a solar panel somewhere, you have to make sure that if the wind blows very strongly, that it will still be there. So this was also a very interesting training to see, like, which angles do you put the rope to stabilize, how do you anchor them. And what also we heard, and then about this one I have like some mixed feelings, but more like positive than negative in general. So Halley, where the station is, gets a lot of snow every year. And the snow have many sources. A bit is coming from the sea, a bit is coming down from the continent, so from a place known Antarctic Plateau. So you can imagine Antarctica as being a big circle in some sense. And in the middle of this circle, there's a part with higher elevation, and the wind brings a bit of snow from the top. And then everything you have in Halley will be 1.5 meters or 1 meter below the surface next year. So if you want to service all the things that we mentioned before, like a battery, then you have to dig this out before. So it's, imagine a treasure box, like it's called a chest, and then this is in the surface of the snow, or you just bury below the snow. There are different strategies. So if you put below the snow, you are more shielded from extreme temperatures. If you're above the surface, then you get more extreme temperature, and by more extreme temperature, I mean in the winter would be -50. So if your battery, if your wooden box with batteries will be above the surface, then your batteries will experience this temperature, which is often not very desirable. The other strategy is to bury in snow, but once you bury it, the next year will be not only the amount that you already buried, but another 1.5 meters of snow on top of it. So you have to do a lot more digging. So there are different strategies from different products. If you have a meteorological station, you want this to be above the surface, of course, because let's say an anemometer, which is a thing that measures the wind speed, if it's under the snow, it doesn't measure the wind speed. If you have a solar panel and it's below the snow level, then it's not generating power. But other instruments, it's no problem. Sometimes it's actually quite good that they are under the snow. And like the magnetometer I mentioned before is measuring magnetic field. Being a bit below the snow is not a problem, because it doesn't interfere with the magnetic field. Too much might be because of cabling, so the cables might not have enough of a slack. So again, there are very different strategies, and it's a case-by-case solution. So some of the things that we have to service, they are up in the continent, so that's what I mentioned before, that I was kind of wrong. So during the station, there is a high possibility and probability, and will probably end up happening because of its high probability, that we'll service instruments that are a bit more remote. So to mention some places, Shackleton Mountains, or a bit in the top of the Antarctic Plateau, close to the pole. I'm really excited, like, I don't know, like, I like outdoors. So if you say to me, you're gonna go to a base in Antarctica, I'm like, oh, that's so cool. If you say you're gonna go to a base in Antarctica, which is at 67 degrees, I'll be like, oh, that's really amazing. But if you say now it's 75, I will get more excited. And now if you say we have to go closer to the pole to do maintenance and some experiments, and I completely get it. Like today, environmental, it's a concern, and taking a plane to service four scientific instruments in a place where getting fuel in the first place is so aggressive to the environment, it's debatable. But I don't know. It many of I'll just give an example. So the discovery of the ozone hole was made in Halley Station. So you're not just, I don't know, spending fuel to get people there for fun. There is a purpose and a meaning, and that's what I try to believe and talk myself to. And at the same time, you have to the opportunity to experience these amazing places. So like mountains that, I don't know, people never been to, or been just few people, or and the landscape must be amazing. So I'm really excited. I'm really excited about the field work in general, and remoteness and new sites. And one reason I think I was, let's say, nominated or in the plan states that I will go to those locations, and then I have two explanations. So the first one is, I admit, in a position for an electronics engineer, I'm not very good in electronics. So I had a bit of electronics in school, or in university to be more precise. And I tried to learn it, but my degree is not as an electronics engineer. It's in aerospace. And the thing that I'm better, or was always better, was software. So having something that is direction hardware is challenging for me. Sometimes I feel like, well, I'm a bit of like imposter syndrome. But I try to like just keep it cool and say, okay, you can learn it, you can learn more. You like almost like a fake it until you make it, but more like a positive approach to it, saying nobody knows everything, and you didn't know stuff before your previous job, so maybe this job will give you the opportunity to know, to learn new things. And so either those places are very easy to service. And they, I mean, they are pretty comfortable and clear with my skills. They tested during the interview, and they know I'm a bit weaker with hardware. We already discussed that on how to improve during the training. Or the fact that I have maybe, and I'll put a big maybe there because I don't know my colleagues that well after 1 week, of course. Maybe because I have a reasonable experience in outdoors. I'm not the most outdoorsy person in the world, and I'm gonna lie. I'm not a professional climber or mountaineer or whatever, but it's a topic I like, and I have a moderate experience. And I'm being very humble in this sense. Like, I'm not good at it, but maybe they thought this is a valuable skill for those missions. Or maybe it was just something else that I don't know. I don't care. I'm really excited about field work. And yeah, that was about it. So, just trying to summarize a bit this information. Different parts of Antarctica have different snow accumulations. It makes sense sometimes to put instruments in the snow and sometimes to leave them in the surface after you go there to do maintenance. And there's a lot of digging, so it will be a lot of physical work to dig stuff out. You go always in two to the field. So for remote sites, when you're doing field work, you go with a pilot. And for less remote sites or places that are accessible by snowmobile, you go with a field guide. And this configuration might change. I'm just kind of like transmitting what we had during the training. So that's it. It's a way less technical episode, but I think it's really interesting. I'm extremely excited. I hope nothing happened that can potentially block this way. I don't know, trying myself the best not to cycle poorly in England, where they drive in a very strange side of the road for me, or try and like don't get an accident, don't try something very risky, in order not to jeopardize all this experience. But We have, honestly speaking, very little control about it. So, fingers crossed, nothing bad will happen. And in December, hopefully, I'll be in the ice and trying to record some interesting content about how the fieldwork actually looks like and not only how I expect it to look. Maybe even comparing how were my expectations and how it ended up being. So that's it. Thanks a lot for taking your time to listen to the podcast, and see you guys in the next one.